Could you imagine if it was your daughter? Could you imagine? Okay, I would like some assistance from my local police department in finding my daughter.
Okay, listen to Ms. Johnson. I'm clear, okay? I'm clear.
Could you imagine if it was your daughter? Could you imagine?
I don't have a 21-year-old daughter, Ms. Johnson.
You have a child? Could you imagine this if it happened to you? And you had no assistance from anybody to help you find your child?
I understand your frustration, Ms. Johnson.
Yeah, it's more than frustration. I called the main number at the police department to talk to the watch commander, and that woman hung up on me.
Oh, they did?
She hung up on you?
Yeah, she hung up on me. It's awful. Something happened to my daughter. Somebody did something to my daughter. She died. They put her in a deep freezer. They moved her out of it. And they have moved her body somewhere else. And what it's come down to is that her body could very well be in this landfill. And I need cadaver dogs. I need investigators. I need police officers who want to do their job. What do we do? We're citizens out here just helpless. What do you do? I've been for 2 weeks running around getting leads and information and passing it over, and they don't even
care.
I'm walking around here to smelling the air for the stench of death, because I know it's warmed up now, you know? And I'm smelling it here now. This is how I'm looking for my daughter.
Could you imagine if it was your daughter, son, cousin, brother, sister, could you? And you say, I don't have a 21-year-old daughter, that's not the correct answer. There is a correct answer in that situation, and I feel like you should be trained appropriately. You say, you know what? I couldn't imagine. I can't imagine what you're going through. Not that you don't have, it's not the question if you have a 21-year-old daughter or not. Like, I can't even, like, I'm still shocked that, I don't know how I missed that when I first played that. Now, let me put some context on that. That's a 911 conversation where Ms. Johnson is at the landfill requesting help from police. And when the police arrive, they arrest them or about to arrest them until Leah makes a call to a police officer that she knows. So she's at the landfill on her own looking for her own daughter and is threatened with arrest after... You know, I played a lot of that 911 call in one of the episodes, and, you know, she didn't like the way that she came off, and I need to put this in context. I've listened to every pretty much 911 call that was recorded, and polite is an understatement for how she handles these calls until she just can't take it anymore. And it's just like, you know, at first they thought that she was just an addict off on her own, but like I said... So, Ms. Johnson is in recovery, so she knows what it's like to be an addict, she knows that life, and she was doing the right thing with Jessica, and she was waiting for Jessica to be ready to be clean, because she knows that you can't just get clean if you don't want to be. And Jessica's fall happened so quickly. You know, it's, you know, starting out with drugs and then bam, it happened so fast. No one thinks their child's going to go missing. Nobody knows what to do when they go missing. But they call the police because that's the most logical thing to do. I'll get more into the police and my opinion, as far as they've been, how I believe they've been on this case and how I view police overall, which is positively. And that's coming from a felon, a convicted felon, who should, you know, society standards should say that I shouldn't like the police. But hey, if someone's breaking in my house, I'm calling the police. And they're going to come and they're going to do their job because that's what they do. 95% of the police are great. But we only hear about that 5%, like we're going to hear about this case, who has both good and bad. I will highlight the good I've seen too. And I try to do that. I try to do as much as I can. People don't come to me when the police are doing an amazing job, right? Because they don't need awareness. Everything is being done. Now, also, I need to make it clear that a lot of agencies don't have the resources, don't have the training, don't have the manpower for all that. There needs to be some type of come between the police and the public. So here's the problem with advocates. A lot of advocates are just so gung-ho against the police because of one specific case, right? We can't judge every interaction with the police based on... So let's say you go into CVS tomorrow and the person ringing you out is an absolute jerk. Every time you go into CVS, do you think that person is going to be a jerk? No. So it shouldn't be treated that way with the police. And, most occasions with the police, if you're polite, they're polite. Just don't be an asshole and they won't be an asshole. It's really not that difficult. But sometimes they're just bad police, just like there are bad cashiers and there are bad pharmacists and there are bad doctors. There are doctors that are drug dealers, technically. So there are bad everything in every profession. So I digress. This is why I need a script. But this episode, I really needed to flow from the heart and kind of just get the raw emotion out after a year of a mother going through hell and being put through hell at the same time. Going through hell because her daughter is missing, and being put through hell by having to start the investigation on her own. And let me tell you, if she was an investigator, she'd be a pretty damn good one, because that whole team, her husband, and Leah, and even Kelly did a lot. They interviewed people, they tracked people down, they recorded everything. There are things that are recorded that I can't listen to, that I don't have access to, which is understandable. There's a lot of information I'm not privy to, and I do not want to be privy to, because when you have that type of information, it's more of a curse than a blessing. You're going to hear about good police and bad police, and Mr. Allday, Detective Allday, is one heck of a cop, I must say. And he's a young cop, and that gives me a lot of hope that going forward, there's a lot of bright future in this area, specifically Lee County. Both of those counties are, the cops involved are great. I'm coming to a blank at the name of the other county. The sheriff just retired, but he was also amazing. They're completely different types of policing. Both amazing. And then we have Albany Police Department, which I usually see the opposite. I'll see a police department which is ran on merit mainly, because you're promoted based on your qualifications, when a sheriff is technically a politician. They run for office, so they're a politician. So they don't really run on merit. In this case, both sheriff departments are great. I don't want to just keep beating a dead horse. I just think that someone taking a missing persons case like this during a pandemic is an admirable thing by that sheriff's department. So I must state that Ms. Johnson was very polite to the dispatcher. She's just been really screwed around. She had just been hung up on by the watch commander before that. So just to put a little context into that, I don't want to just start it like that. we're coming upon a year, like I said, and there has been progress. As far as Albany Police Department is concerned, I'd say there has not been, though. And that's only my opinion. I have no idea what the family or anyone else thinks. So before this episode, I must first say that all of these opinions and views that I say are mine only. They're not backed by the family or anyone. They're mine. This is the way I feel about this. And no one else. So please don't associate if I say something negative about something or positive that that's what the family thinks or someone else thinks. I mean, I've only really even had one or two conversations with Mrs. Johnson. Our schedules were so different. That's just the way it works. So if I say something, it does not mean that she feels that way. Obviously everyone knows that she's upset, as anyone would be if their daughter was missing for a year. So let me just put that out there before this episode, because I do have a lot of opinions on this one that are pretty straightforward and out there. So I hope you enjoy, and thanks for listening. So, as we reflect 1 year that Jessica Van Zandt Dietzel, I wish I could just remove the Dietzel because she never had a husband. I don't really know what you would call him. As we've seen, I'm going to do a little bit of a reflection of the podcast from inception to where the case is today. And if you're listening to this podcast, you've probably listened to the previous, so you've probably seen that disgusting video of Man-Man. Well, boy, child, whatever you want to call him, berating and just disgusting speak to his wife, to the mother of his child. I think that he is the dirt beneath my shoes, and worse, I think he's an absolute scumbag piece of crap. But I don't think he's a murderer. I don't think he has the balls to do that. And I don't think he'd kill his daughter's mother. Whether we can even really call him a father or not, that's a whole nother spectrum that we're not going to get into. Okay? And as I reflect, I personally, throughout this, the reason I even do this is because my life is just a corroboration of all messed up things, just like anyone else, right? We all think we've had it bad. Alcoholic father, manic depressant, but he was very successful, and then when you learn more and you realize that the way his father treated him, you realize that, my father was a great father. Which gets me into a life of my own personal addiction, which started with a football injury, hoping to go, play D1, to play D2, maybe D1 football. You blow your knee out senior year. Had never been in trouble, had never drank, nothing. Which led to a roller coaster ride of addiction that, I still struggle with to this day. I've had a recent slip up the last month or two. Someone can relapse without even taking another drug. That you relapse the way you think, and then it just slowly happens. Which is why I give Jessica's mother so much credit for how she has stayed strong through this for Jessica's daughter and for her own sanity. I mean, just imagine you wake up one day and you just know something's wrong. You just know that something happened to your daughter and no one will listen. Literally no one, not even the police. And if you don't believe me, you can hear it for yourself.
Now, should I call the... Who do I call? Because I can't get the city...
Let me tell you who you call.
Who?
You're going to call 911.
Yes, ma'am.
And you're going to tell them what you just told me.
Are they going to treat me like I'm stupid? Because I've been going through this since March 1st with the Albany Police Department. And I knew something happened to my daughter.
I don't know, ma'am, but that is
what we got here.
Ma'am, we're going to the landfill. My name's Christina Johnson. I talked to the city police chief, and then I talked to Kevin Sproul. He promised me he was going to give me an update yesterday because I told him that we had anonymous tips that told us that my daughter's body had been in a freezer off Cordell Road. And now the Baker County Sheriff just called me to tell me that he got information that her body had been in that freezer, and now it's at the landfill.
What? Your name is Christina
Johnson.
Christina.
And my daughter is Jessica Van Zant Dietzel, and she's been missing. It's going to be on your left, Andy, up there, I think.
Okay. You're going to have to call the police department and
yes,
let them
ma'am.
Know what you have. You're going to have to call them, okay?
Yes, ma'am. Not exactly
okay.
Here, but somewhere along. Okay.
Call them, okay?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
All right. Well.
Even at the lowest point in her life, when she is being sent from police department to police department, and that's just one small recording of the many recordings we have of the neglect of the Albany Police Department. And I'm probably going to be in trouble for saying that, and you know what, I don't really give a fuck anymore, because they flat out, they suck as far as how they treated this case from the beginning. Yeah, we know it was a pandemic. How do you listen to that and not feel a certain way, right? She is going to the landfill to look for her own daughter because no one else will. And she is polite enough to say, ma'am. That, my friends, is character. That's class. You know, something that she has not gotten in return completely from people that you would expect it from. Now, listen. I do not like to bash the police. I don't. I'm very pro-police. But I've made a conscious effort to call out good policing, because we don't do that in society at all anymore. And it is okay to do that, right? Yes, it is their job. But when they go above and beyond their job, you call that out. And I've said from the beginning, and I still say it to this day, that Investigator Alday has done that. He is a great investigator. He's given, you know, the public just enough information that they need while keeping everything, I'm sure, tight to the vest. I'm sure they have a lot. Look, he made it clear on A&E when he said, I will play the recording, but A&E will probably shut it down or no, so I don't know if I'll be able to play it. I'll put it in the video, because I don't my videos are not monetized, so A&E will just put what they do is if I was being able, so basically if I was monetized on YouTube, what A&E would do was they would get all that monetization for like a 2-second clip, but it's not, so it is what it is, and I think it's important to listen to the words from Alday, where he says that, you know, they know who the last person, the last confirmed person to be with Jessica, the one whom Jessica was using the phone, that has been, to put it lightly, uncooperative from the beginning. Now, I'm clear on this when I say that I don't believe lawyering up is at all an admission of guilt. I think it is your right, and I think you should do it. I think that you can lawyer up and still be cooperative. You just talk with your lawyer there. Now, the reason I say that is because people have been, you know, gaslighted, green-lighted, whatever you want to call it, into guilty, just because they're, you know, the last person with them, or a spouse, or whatnot. So, in this country, we have innocent until proven guilty, and I try so hard, to stick to that because it is very difficult in society today when we try and we convict people in public, through the public, and it's not right. On many cases, it is because there's clear evidence that that person is guilty. So there really is no, I mean, yes, you still need that trial, but you just know. If you have nothing to hide, Mr. Lawyer Up, why didn't you cooperate? Why didn't you, you know, I mean, that's all I'm really going to say about him. I don't want to have to edit this too much. But you all, like, if you can't feel for Christina in that clip, and what she's, that's just one small one. I mean, there's another one where, I mean, she is, like, almost begging them just to take the damn report. Just to even listen to her. That's not right. And I'm hearing this a lot in a lot of cases, and it's getting me angry because, listen, I've looked this stuff up, okay? I'm not just somebody who's here just saying I have facts and I don't, okay? It is federally mandated that you take that report as soon as somebody wants to report it. For an adult, yes, even for an adult. There is no 24 to 48. I guess there are small agencies across the country that are trying to put this into their own police policies, but the way the law works is that the federal law is the least amount that you must have, okay? And then from there on, it can be, if you want to have local laws that are more strict, you can do that, but they can't be less. So you can't say that someone cannot make a report. If someone is missing for 2 seconds and they want to report it, they can do that. Now, let me also say this in support of the police on this. I understand why many, many, many police do this. But I can also tell you this. When someone is that upset and they know that their child is an addict, something is wrong. They're not just, quote unquote, missing. They're missing. And it's because she missed her daughter's birthday. And if they had just listened to that, maybe they would have started investigating a little sooner. Maybe some evidence wouldn't have been discarded. Maybe they'd be further along. Now, the reason I say that all day is such a great investigator is because he really didn't have to take this case on. It's not, I mean, you know, she didn't go missing in his jurisdiction. The reason that she took it on is simply because Mrs. Johnson lives in his county. And that's an admirable thing, especially these days, because I've seen police departments, you know, play catch with who's going to report it. And I've even seen a case where it was reported and the family thought it was reported, but it was reported at the wrong police station, so no one was investigating it. Now, here's what I think. I think you have a blanket policy that if someone goes missing, they can walk into their local, wherever, so let's say their parents are even a state away, and they go into their local police department, and they file that report. That police station then reaches out to the next police station. It's much easier for them to do that. These families are literally going through the absolute worst thing anyone can go through in their entire life, and you're fucking playing bullshit cat and mouse games with them, and that's fucking acceptable, and I'm sick of it, and I'm just going to continue to call it out until it just fucking stops, and excuse my language, but I'm just sick of it. Like I said, I love telling the police when they do a great job, but I think I've really gone away from calling them out on their bullshit too, and I just don't like that I've been doing that. I think I've been giving them a little bit too many passes. And it's unacceptable. So, I just wanted to do that. You know, it's been a year, okay? That it'll be a year tomorrow. And it's not an anniversary because there's nothing to celebrate. Okay? This has torn a mother, a daughter, a friend, a cousin to shreds. These people are hurting. hurting. A whole town is hurting. Now, another thing I need to call out is the public, because people know what the fuck happened. They don't want to be a snitch, or they don't want to, I don't know what. What if it was your daughter? What if it was your girlfriend? What if it was your wife? What if it was your mother? Things become a little different. And this goes across the whole country in many small towns where the public who is crying for justice, when it is the public that needs to help law enforcement to get these answers, because we know people, like even myself, even just talking to a police officer, even if I haven't done anything wrong, I get kind of nervous just because, you know, it's a police officer, and I don't know, that's just how I am. But tell, you know, you can do it anonymously, just do it. You can even get money for, like, you can get money for it, come on. I mean, who doesn't want some extra money? And you can stop the pain on a mother's heart that is just, I mean, you hear it in her voice. Like, if that doesn't affect you, then you're just not human. So, we're going to get into this Mr. AJ Cannon. We're going to talk about some other suspects right from AJ's mouth, right? Right from the, from his mouth. As far as AJ Cannon goes, the guy is just an absolute liar. I don't know how bad of a guy he is. Besides the fact he puts his hands on women, so he's a piece of shit. But other than that, he's probably a great guy. So, let's get into this.
I'm going to circle back to Ms. Johnson in just one moment, but now to Bobby Poitevant, WALD Albany. Bobby, let's just start at the beginning. When did Jessica go missing? When was she last seen by a human, not a video surveillance?
So we've got different reports from different law enforcement, and I'm sure Mr. Alday can kind of go into that, what they saw with the sheriff's office. But we have our last reported that we've known of from law enforcement is outside of a motel, actually. And that was sometime at the end of February. We have both the Lee County Sheriff's Office telling us that, as well as
APD. Mr. Poitevant, mm-hmm. Let me ask you a couple of questions right there. Last seen, standing near a motel. Do we have a description of what she was wearing, who she was with, possible vehicle, morning, noon, or night, and her demeanor? Any of that?
We don't have much information about that. We just, according to the APD, according to Albany Police, she willingly got into a vehicle outside of the Luxury Inn, which is located in Albany, and that's about all the information that we know.
Hold on, Do you know what kind of vehicle, Bobby?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Let me go straight to Investigator Danny Alday joining us from the Sheriff's Department there in Lee County. Investigator Alday, thank you for being with us. What can you tell me about that sighting of her at the Luxury Inn?
So through our investigation, we have not found any evidence to hold that reliable.
Is there any surveillance video there?
No, ma'am. We do not have any surveillance video.
Do they have it? Do they have it at the Luxury Inn?
I'm not aware of any at this time.
To the mom, Christina Johnson, have you been to the Luxury Inn? Have you noticed if there's surveillance video or not? Because I find it really hard to believe they don't at least have it where you check in.
Actually, when that was reported, it was a third-party tip. And later on that evening, it actually, somebody took a picture of the women in the, and it was confirmed that was not my daughter. It was some other female.
Well, no wonder, Bobby Poitevant and Investigator Alday, it can't be confirmed because it was a different woman. So to hay with the video, it's not her. Oh, man.
So. That information is so critical because when I first looked into the case, okay, I said, okay, well, I mean, she willingly got into a car in front of a motel. She's not missing. She doesn't want to be found. And there's something important that people need to understand about this and the context and why it's so important, and when it happened, what was going on with the case. That is all just as important as the information, more important. Let's go back to Jessica's first missing. Miss Johnson cannot even file a report, never mind to get people to look into it. She had a feeling something was wrong, and it wasn't until Jessica's daughter's birthday came and went without a call from Jessica that she knew something was seriously wrong. And that happens in a lot of these cases. Other signs are someone gets paid their monthly check or have paychecks and the money is not being used. That's another sign for family members that something is really bad. And cops need to have training for this to understand that. I do understand that. A lot of times family calls and the person's not missing. They just want the family to contact them. They're probably upset. But that's not the case with a lot of these huge red flag cases like this. And the context is so critical here because this tip supposedly came in while the 911 calls that I played in the first episode, and I just played that short clip of it to start the video, to start this podcast during that. And that's why they supposedly didn't want to go look at the landfill because she was alive. And so that is critical because what if she was there? And that tip seemed pretty damn credible. Now, they almost got arrested, like I said. I don't know. I don't remember if they even got to search there or not. Why do that? Okay. Also, I've never seen this where third-party information is being reported by police. That's unheard of. Absolutely unheard of. Not just that, but, you know, like I said, when I looked at the case and I mentioned that, Leah said, no, that never happened. And if I went and looked, I'm sure that some of those news outlets still have that up there. They've begged and pleaded for this to come off. As you see, All Day steps right in. That is not credible. It should have been taken down immediately. And I think it was honestly a false tip. I'm not going, you know, I'll leave the conjecture up to you as to why or who put that tip in. But I do believe that there is definitely some corruption going on within the Albany Police Department. I don't know if it affects this case, but I've just heard that they're not known to be the best boys in blue that you can get. Now, I must also say this is during a pandemic. No, I mean, if you've never been to a landfill, just let me tell you, it's not a pleasant place to go to. I don't say, hey, it's Friday night, let's go hang out at the landfill, right? It's not something that you want to do. But I'll tell you this. I'll just tell you one example. The Connecticut State Police, in searching for Jessica Dulos, would not unturn any stone. They'd be in that damn landfill on their hands and knees looking for her. Every police department is different, like I said, but this is so important and needs to be brought back to the light because of where it originated, how it originated, and how goddamn important it was in the most critical time. They already were behind the eight ball as far as investigating the case because from when she went missing to when she was reporting missing is a pretty big gap. And that's of no fault to the family because first of all, when they first tried to do the reporting, it was not taken seriously, which is the first missteps by the Albany Police Department. So, first I want to address the previous episode and how it is pretty bad. It's pretty damn terrible. I didn't even check it over. You know, I deleted the second half instead of saving it so that I could just put it out. I repeated things, so this is going to kind of be a little bit of a combination, and there's going to be a video to go along with this, with messages and other important information that I've been saying I'm going to put out, and it's going to be put out now. I'm going to go back to being someone who, you know, says they're going to do something and actually do it. You know, the problem is I try to help too many people, and then I don't worry. I just try to help too many people, and I'll say yes to this family and yes here, but I said yes to Jessica because I heard those 911 calls. I saw a video where she's just crying out just for anyone to listen. And then, you know, I was very intent and focused. And then I decided I'm going to help this one, and I want to help that one. I need to stick to what I promised Jessica's mother and finish this out before I start anything else. And that's why this episode, you're going to hear a few of the same things you heard in the previous one. It's just going to be put together much better, and you're going to hear a few new things. We're just going to go do a little brief on, this episode is going to be a little longer, and that's fine because this is, you know, it's been a year now, and Jessica's still missing. She's not home safe yet. No one has any type of closure. There's you can't even talk about justice because I don't want to go there. We still are hoping and praying that Jessica comes home safe. And that's the bottom line. So, you know, you're going to hear me and Leah talking. You're going to hear AJ talking. I might have some clips from Man Man. Definitely some classic Etherton stuff. And if you guys could, please just comment on your thoughts or what you think about this case, because, you know, viewer input is the most important. That's where a lot of great ideas come from, is from you guys. You guys are essential to this. The public is most important in these cases. And you got people out there who are so anti-armchair detective or web sleuth, but people don't realize that everyday people are solving cases, are, you know, helping solve the trafficking issue. You guys have, you know, so I've only been doing this 2.5, maybe 3 years, and I mean, Albany has, Leah is, she's tenacious. You know, I've never really seen anyone like it because she has, you know, that background. Well, I don't know if you call it background. You know, her husband's in the military, so I don't know. She knows all that, like, stuff. Whatever that means, but you know, the law enforcement is similar to the military. You know, the way it's ran, the way it's structured, just, you know, the thin blue line, all that stuff. And she doesn't take any bullshit. I mean, put it to you like this. If I hurt somebody and they were missing, I would not want her anywhere near that case. And she's just a great person as far as helping others with addiction. And just as an advocate, though, she's just amazing. I haven't come across any advocates like her to this point in the last couple years. And you know, I admire everything that she does. She's a trailblazer. I mean, she's great. So let me get off the Leah train here for a minute, and we'll start with our conversation about AJ's conversation. And I still have to run it by Leah. I'd like to play or have, maybe I'll put it on the YouTube channel or just on the Facebook page, the conversation of, you know, that you're hearing between her and AJ, because I want it, the unedited out there so that you can see that we didn't really have to edit it much to make him look like this. He did that on his own. He doesn't even know his own lies. So, without further ado, let me get into the episode.
So, right now we're going to get into AJ Cannon, Jessica, and Van Dietel's current boyfriend, I guess you would say, when she went missing. We're going to go into the conversation. So, let's start out with his last messages with Jessica.
So, his last messages with Jessica are on the 16th, where she actually would have responded. So they go back and forth about her getting picked up. But the most important text message, I think, is that on the 18th, AJ sends her a message saying, "Guess you and Patrick are doing okay. Guess I'm about to get out of this hellhole for a while. Please take care of yourself and do whatever it takes to get that baby girl back because she needs her mother. Love you." And then there's like some days that go on in between, and he basically just keeps talking about how he's hurt and, you know, you and Patrick enjoy your life. You and Patrick go do whatever makes you happy. And then he does start messaging her a few days later asking if she's okay. I would assume that was after he had heard from Jessica's mom, Christina, and had started to hear the rumors that something had happened to Jessica.
Okay, so I think I might have misunderstood one of his messages to Jessica. The day that she supposedly went to Patrick's, and that we know of, that where the picture was taken in Sadler's tent, I thought he messaged her and said something to the effect of, oh, that, you know, you chose him over me.
Yeah, it was something to that effect, and I believe that was on the, was it the 13th or 16th?
And that was the day that she was behind White Seafood, right?
Right.
Okay. Yeah, so I had always found that as a big red flag, because as people will see, he does point the finger at Patrick Rambone quite a bit. And then other people did as well, but if AJ is the one that was first pointing it, people would be amped to believe it. Believe it, because that was her boyfriend.
Right, and we know that... We know that Brian Sadler did make that post around that time that stated, AJ Cannon, stop putting me in your bullshit, brother, because AJ was pointing the finger, and I think it's important to note that at the proximity that they all lived. So AJ's house is right on the corner, right across the street is woods. You would follow a trail, an ATV trail, into those woods to get to Tent City. White Seafood is just a block away from AJ Cannon's house, so they're all right there in the same vicinity.
Right, which I always found interesting, too, knowing the rumors going around. Now, when we've all seen, I don't know if everyone's seen it, but when Patrick Rampone is being questioned by you guys and Jessica's mother, to me, like I've said in the past, he comes off as more sincere. People have said that he can go off the edge a little bit, but, you know, I just think that AJ, trying to shift the focus so much in this conversation, points to him as a definite top of the list suspect. And that message was, I mean, we'll have a picture of it for the video one. It just comes off as very vindictive and jealous. And why don't you go into what people have said about when others want to leave his house, what happened? We know, we already heard from Steve Eagleton, said he likes to trap people there, but don't have you heard that from quite a few people.
Right. So in Stephen Etherton's call, if he told the truth about one thing, it was that.
But I know that him and my daddy used to do business together, so that is how I met AJ, was through him. Well, I went over to his house a couple times and hung out, and he's just, every time I go over there, he's always so damn twacked out on that ice and shit that he won't let me leave from over there. And see, my mom and everybody would rather us be drug free, but I mean, I do like to smoke weed, and I'm not gonna lie. And Jessica, she would call me to go over there to AJ's all the time to smoke with him, but I didn't like to go over there. He's got holes tore all in his walls where he thinks he hid dope. His carpet ain't been vacuumed in years, and I told Jessica, I said, girl, you don't live like this. You don't belong over here. You need to get the hell out of here.
That AJ would get super tweaked out, get paranoid, and not allow people to leave his house. That's why a lot of people didn't like to go over there. So we do know that, I mean, we don't know for a fact, but it's been said by multiple people that some of his previous girlfriends were kind of had to be rescued from the house in a way that they would have to have friends come and sneak them out. And you can also see, if you go back in Jessica's text messages even further back, that when she's trying to get people to come get her from AJ's, she's always kind of sneaking out. Like, she wasn't, not that she wasn't free to go and come, maybe she was, maybe she wasn't, but there were times when it seemed like she may have been nervous about a confrontation had she tried to leave AJ's house.
Right, and that brings up a very crucial message that she said to somebody about him hitting on her. That's correct, right? That he is known to beat her?
He It just said that she was tired of him beating on her and putting his hands on her, and she did send that to a friend, and she was talking about AJ, that she wanted someone to come and get her. There was a big blowout. I believe the date would have been the 16th or somewhere in that time frame where neighbors do see clothes getting thrown in the yard. They, you know, I don't think they were on good terms when Jessica went missing. And she did say that she stated, you know, to more than one person that she was tired of him hitting on her.
Right. And we know that he has an extensive past when it comes to drug use, and the drug that he does use, known for violence and paranoia. If you want to touch upon some comments he made about China.
Right. So
to show some paranoia.
He is a very paranoid person. We do know that he had cameras, surveillance cameras. Actually, a neighbor did say during, you know, when people were outside of his house that, you know, he's watching you guys on camera, right? He had cameras set up around his house, and actually in one conversation did tell me that the satellites in China could tell me everything that I needed to know. And he was very adamant about these satellites in China. He did have extreme paranoia at times. That's well documented and well known to other people. It's why some people didn't want to be over there and didn't want to be around him, because he would go into bouts of extreme, extreme paranoia. And yeah, he wanted me to just basically call China, just China, no number, no person, but they would be able to tell me everything I needed.
Okay, so we know of another incident where we learned this from Stephen Eagleton, that Jessica had clothes in his car and she wanted them out, and he had this whole issue saying that he didn't have his keys to his truck, right?
Right. And that she had the keys, and it was just like a big mess. And she actually did end up, I believe, throwing the keys in the yard.
Right, and that's when she supposedly hit his car or something. It was in the Eagleton interview.
Yeah.
Or not interview,
Phone call.
Phone call. So, I've listened to this one specific phone call by AJ repeatedly, and I just noticed that he lies a lot, continuously lies, always tries to deflect, and I think he has an overinflated ego.
Absolutely.
He makes mentions basically saying that because he doesn't do opiates that he's so much better than everyone else.
Yeah, he's not dependent on a drug, right?
Right, right. Exactly. That really, I thought, was odd. Now, does he have a record, do you know?
He does have a record. Actually, I know that when this all happened and Jessica went missing, Christina was outside of his house begging for the cops to kick in the door. They came, Albany Police Department did come and knock and say that he wasn't home and that they would come back tomorrow. This is in the very beginning, and AJ is one of the last people that Jessica was seen with. They don't go. The next day, Lee County actually did come and get him on a warrant. I don't remember exactly what that warrant was for, but it was I do believe it was drug-related. And they actually picked him up.
Now, I noticed a few other aspects of his call that I just found odd. And it's when he's trying to throw, you know, Rambone under the bus about him asking for a weapon. Was that him?
Right. And he's actually saying...
He took the truck, right?
Right. He's actually saying, I believe in that phone call, a guy named Donald was actually looking for a weapon and a flashlight. But that would have been, I think he was basically saying that Patrick was with him at the time. The story's confusing, and he's told two versions of that story. You're going to hear the one phone call where it's the first version. There was another time that he was spoken to where he told a different version of that. But it was Patrick Rambone and a guy named Donald that he basically said he came knocking on his door looking for a weapon and a flashlight, so he gave him a machete. Odd, odd conversation.
And didn't he also say that Rambone got a flat tire in his truck?
He did say that Rambone had put a flat tire in his truck, and then that's also another thing. We do know that her brother, Jessica's brother, actually did go to a tire shop with him to get a tire. But in that conversation, if you listen, first he says that he went with Mark to get a tire, and then he turns that conversation around 5 minutes later and says he had the tire at the house. So actually, they did go get a tire. But why he turns it around and lies, I mean, I don't know if the man knows the truth.
Right, and that was one thing that I picked up on, too. Because I listened to it so many times, and I just found it odd that he made sure to mention that Patrick wanted to go to the store to get a tire. And he told Patrick, no, I have a tire. Yet, he then says that he saw her brother when they went to go get the tire. He's just talking in circles. I don't know if it's just because... for me, it's when people lie. You lie for two reasons. Either you don't want to, offend somebody, or you're hiding something.
Right.
And I think it's obvious we're talking about a murder. Most likely a murder, I'm sorry. A missing person who was possibly murdered, and he's lying about a lot of petty things. He's gonna, why lie about these little details? So, you think he's just gonna come out and admit anything? The problem is, a lot of the people involved with this case are heavy drug users, and it's difficult to get credible information.
Right.
But, he was obviously jealous, obviously knew Jessica was out of his league, so he had many motives to harm her. Do you know anything about what the police think about him as a possible suspect?
I think they don't think he's been honest. I know he's not crossed off the suspect list because, he hasn't been honest. He's not honest in one phone conversation. He goes back and forth. I don't think he's been very forthcoming. I think he's tried to deflect. And a lot of it could be, a lot of these people are involved in drugs and they make up stories and they lie maybe to cover some of their drug use. Maybe they're afraid that they're going to get into trouble. But as you know, AJ drops a bombshell in that phone conversation, and you would think, knowing what he says, that he would want Jessica to be found, so he would be forthcoming, and all he's done, in my opinion, is skirt around the truth and lie.
So, I agree 100%. So let's get into that bombshell. I'll definitely play the audio for that, but let's discuss it now. He mentions that Jessica is pregnant. Now, what else does he say?
He also says that it could be his child, it could be Patrick Rambone's, or it could be Stephen Etherton's. He does mention that he's excited because he's 45 and, quote, wants a baby. So he does say that he's excited about it. He also does say the statement that kind of has always stuck out to me is when they find her, it's going to be double. And I'm just paraphrasing because I don't remember the exact quote. It's been a while since we had that conversation. But he's making it sound like he already knows that something bad has happened to Jessica. I think we all know foul play was involved. But we don't know for sure until we find her that she's gone. So for him to say, well, now it's double because she was pregnant. And then he changes the subject really quickly. Like, we're having this deep conversation about her being pregnant, and then he starts talking about his backyard. To me, that, just in my opinion, is kind of strange that you would go from that to talking about your backyard. You'll see in the when you do hear the phone conversation, it just rubs me completely the wrong way.
So that's interesting you said that, because I think maybe his backyard should be searched out. Why would he go from that to the backyard? But before I even go into anything else, he does mention that possibly it is Steve Etherton's, right? And everybody who has listened to this podcast has heard Etherton's conversation, and we've heard that he said that he has never been intimate with Jessica.
Right, bullshit, but okay.
Right, so we all know that he is also a liar. Now, why would you lie about not being intimate with somebody? I'm not sure. It's, we already discussed him, though. Now, do you think AJ was just speculating about Etherton, or that he had direct knowledge that she had slept with these people?
I'm not real sure. He could have just been speculating. He could just be completely throwing shade, trying to throw shade. He likes to throw shade at Patrick. We all know that. And as you previously mentioned, Patrick was very cooperative from the very beginning, and I do feel like, and I could be wrong because maybe Patrick's just a very good liar, but I do feel like Patrick was cooperative and Patrick was telling the truth to the best of his abilities. You also have to remember that Patrick has had heavy drug use for years, and he was kind of even confused on what day it was when we went to talk to him. Is it possible that they had a relationship? I think it's very possible. I do, just an opinion here, not a fact, but I do think that sometimes Jessica went to Patrick when she was afraid or sought him for protection because he was that older male figure. And we do know that, I mean, let's be frank, Jessica had some issues when it come to a dad because of the way that her dad left this earth, and it deeply bothered her. So maybe she saw that in Patrick. I don't know. It's a twisted world of drugs and stuff, and maybe that happened. Maybe it didn't. Maybe AJ's just throwing shade. That's the problem. No one wants to tell exactly the truth, and I'm not sure you can believe two words that come out of AJ's mouth.
Okay, now I also wonder if it's actually been confirmed, or, you know, Jessica had ever told anyone else that she was pregnant. Do you know?
Not to my knowledge.
Because, you know, I think that if that is the case, there's also a chance that the Mr. Lawyered Up would have a motive if it was actually his.
That's been a thought for me. And the rumor has been around, so I have heard the rumor that she was pregnant, but did that originate from AJ running his mouth, or did someone have direct knowledge? I have never personally had anybody with direct knowledge that said those words came out of Jessica's mouth besides AJ.
Right, and unfortunately, we do not have her phone to see all of our conversations, correct? Or because she didn't have a phone.
We do have a phone that was found at a location that she was using. It was broken. There is nothing in the conversations about a pregnancy.
So my thing is, do you think she would have had the child if she was pregnant?
I honestly feel like Jessica would have.
Right, and so we know that AJ says he wants a child. But honestly, he could have just been trying, just saying that. We can't believe anything he says. Now, there were other points that you wanted to make about the conversation. Do you want to go into some of those now?
So one of the points I wanted to make, probably the largest point, is that AJ is adamant the last time he saw Jessica was on February 16th. We have made contact with an anonymous witness who saw Jessica and AJ at a different location, and she is just as adamant that it was the 17th, and she knows that because it was President's Day and she was off work. So I don't understand why he knows how critical this is. His girlfriend is missing. He would lie about the date, but he was very adamant that he did not see her after Sunday. There's a whole story in there about his parents coming to dinner, and he knows that it was their Sunday dinner, so he knows it was the 16th. I just don't understand, if there's nothing nefarious going on, why AJ would lie about the last time he's seen her. You think he would be beating our doors down to help find her because she was his girlfriend at the time she goes missing. And I understand they were having a squabble, you know, but this is not the first time they had a squabble. So it's nothing new. That was definitely one thing that struck me as odd. Another thing, if you listen to the very end of the phone call where it gets disconnected, we start talking about someone's mom and Messenger, and I actually start to read the message and he just hangs up. When he doesn't have a reason or an excuse for something, he just hangs up on me and then, you know, calls back and says he has a guest that just supposedly just showed up. Because I don't think he had an answer for it. He's not the best liar. I mean, that's obvious in the tape. We're telling two different stories about a tire shop and one phone conversation. There's just a lot of red flags with AJ, and the fact that he put his hands on her. Domestic violence is a huge issue. We know that. We know that Kenny also had domestic violence issues when it came to Jessica. And to me, that you can't rule either out. If you're willing to put your hands on a woman, you're a certain type of scumbag.
Of course, and I've said that many times, that, you know, anyone who puts their hands on a woman is not a man. That's a coward. And we know that AJ did put his hands on her in the past, so ruling him out is just impossible. And after I listened to his the conversations, I can't shake him being the one who did it. I just got feeling that he was involved. Now, that's just complete. So it is speculation, but it's based on facts. The facts of the case that we have, which there's a lot of rumors, but there are also a lot of facts.
Right.
And, yeah, you know, I believe it's 95% of the time or 90-something percent of the time it's somebody close to the victim.
But I do think that you made a good point with lawyered up guy. If Jessica was pregnant and there was a chance that it could have been his, he's the type of guy that would have wanted her to get rid of it. And I don't think Jessica would have been that type of person. She loves Elena. She made mistakes. Jessica wasn't perfect. I think everyone knows that at this point, but she loved her daughter very much. And I just think she wasn't the type of person. She was a Christian. She wasn't the type of person to just get rid of it. We saw that she tried to raise Elena. She was trying to make the steps to get Elena back even after Elena was taken, and Kenny kind of ruined that for her. But I just don't, I think she would have maybe even been a bit excited, if that makes sense, because just she did love kids, and she that was just the type of person that she is. So if it was his, I do think that's a very good point. He would have not wanted that because he's, probably considers himself in a different class, although we all know the truth.
Right. We know that he is not a good person.
Right. To say the least.
To say the least. So, I'm trying to think of any other important points in the AJ conversation that we haven't touched on.
Thinking too.
So I know it's recording right now, I'm just going to edit this out, but I'm going to place clips from the conversations, obviously. I'm not going to play the whole thing, but a good amount of clips.
Right. Play that part where he hangs up on me, because that has always freaked me out.
Right. Now, the other conversations, they were short, right?
The other conversations that I had with him that weren't recorded?
No, there was others that were recorded besides the long one.
That was just the second part. So there's just the second part, and it's literally me calling him back, like, I don't know what happened. And he's like, oh, I had a surprise guest show up, and I got to go. So that's the same day. That's the same call.
I thought you told me that there was, that you had found other ones.
I thought I'd found other ones, but they're not. They're just repeats of those. There were some conversations that were not recorded because I was on a search or I was out when he called. I can go into that he showed up on the scene during a search. If you want to go into that, he did. And that he came and found me one time when I was searching. He came and found me at my car and talked to me. We can go into that if you want.
Okay, so there are a few other issues with him that have happened. Talk about some things that he's done that are just kind of out there.
So
that would make you think, like, why is he doing this?
A couple different encounters with Mr. Cannon. The first being when we were searching around the woods around Tent City, he did show up where everyone was staged to search on his bike, and he was trying to tell us how to get to Tent City. And he was very excited to show us how to get to Tent City and where Patrick had been and where Brian Sadler was. And he was very excited to once again point the finger in that direction. And I would just note from that encounter, as with any meth user, I feel like you've got a lot of twitchy, weird behavior, And so that was my first impression of AJ, was meeting him at a search site that he just happened to show up on, which was kind of strange. I mean, there was a lot of vehicles and police presence, but he literally rode up on a child's bike, which was weird in its own little thing, obviously. And then the second time that I encountered him in person was when it was just myself and another, I think there was only one other car, and we were going to go, you know, do a little more searching at that location near Tent City, and it does happen to be in very close proximity to his house, so he saw the vehicles and came out, and once again was very shifty, very just... almost like he's excited to point the finger again in that direction and to tell me about the pictures and the shovel that Kenny supposedly took pictures of and found in the back of the yard. I have actually seen those photos. It's like a tiger shirt, a shovel, and I do know that there were searches performed behind his house. I was a part of one of those searches, and we never found any of those items. I will say he was very... okay with us searching, because when we did that first, it wasn't our first search, but it was our first search with police, with us all together. He did let us go in the backyard. He didn't let us in his backyard through his house, but he did know that we were going to be going in the backyard, and he did tell me how to get around back there. But I mean, I would have thought I would have been a little more welcoming and let you right in the gate, but you know, that's just me. And there wasn't much he was going to say to us with the police presence that was there, obviously. So I don't really take that into account of him being helpful. But he did keep mentioning Tent City and just follow this trail and just, you know, do X, Y, and Z. And we have had other conversations that unfortunately were not taped because I was either out on a search in my vehicle, you know. Actually, before the conversation that is taped, I was in my vehicle and had to come home and get ready to record, because I did know that I wanted to document the conversation, obviously. And he has said so many different stories, and he's just, I don't know how else to describe it other than shifty, and kind of like he's hiding something, and who knows what that is. I mean, does he have direct knowledge, or is he responsible? We don't know.
Now, has he ever actually mentioned any possible theories that he either believed or heard or anything like that?
He has always pointed his finger in the direction of Patrick Rambo and Brian Sadler, or I do believe at one point he mentioned Kenny and the guy named Donald, which I'm not going to go into his last name, but he did mention him as well as Patrick. Brian, and I do think he did mention Kenny once or twice.
Okay. And China.
And China. And he also did actually, you know, now that I think of it, he did mention Johnny Lemming as well. Huh.
But, this Draper guy, I'm thinking it's between Draper and Dam and Johnny, to be honest with you. But I don't know. It's got me so fucking puzzled. I really don't know. I mean, but Johnny kept coming in my mind because of Dam, this Texas and shit he was sending me. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I knew that he was trying to get at her because, I mean, he was coming by here. Man, where's old girl at? You know what I'm saying? And he was, you know, a lot of times Jessica, she would hang out in the bathroom because she got what she was doing. She was feeling herself, you know what I'm saying? She already knew she was pretty because I told her she was pretty all the time. And she was feeling herself. She'd go in the bathroom. She'd start taking selfies of herself. And she changed clothes. Then Matt's girlfriend's mother gave her, I don't know how many. She went to Goodwill and bought, because Jessica said she didn't have no clothes and she had just lost all her clothes. And Melissa Smith's mama went and bought at Goodwill and bought her a bunch of clothes and brought back to her and said, "Here, I just got these from Goodwill. Here you go." And gave her a bunch of clothes.
Yeah.
And because, I mean, she liked the yellow.
And didn't he also say that Rambone got a flat tire in his truck?
He did say that Rambone had put a flat tire in his truck. And
see, Rambone, the 3 days he was over here at my house, it was kind of strange for him to just hang out here and want to borrow my truck. Then he comes back with my truck with a flat tire. And the tire, I swear to God, the tire don't even match the damn... wasn't even matching the truck, and I was like, "Well, fuck! You need to change that tire. You need to get a tire change now." I got another tire inside of my damn blue truck out there, my other S10 Blazer. I said, "There's a tire there for that rim." I said, "You need to get it and change." Like, man, I can't take it up to the rim shop. I said, "Hell no! You gonna change it right there in that fucking front yard?" And that's what he did.
And when what? So when John? So who are you aware of? The last fucking person to see her that you know, like that you know for a fact.
Rambone.
It was Rambone.
I'm thinking, yeah.
This is going to be where this first part ends, as this episode is very long, but I think that's perfectly acceptable because these last episodes are really just tying everything together from beginning to end. While the podcast was going on, everything was still developing. We were kind of just talking about things as they came, as, you know, leads came in. Now we have a better overall view of the case. So it's important to bring up these important points and use them in context, because something that you may have heard in the beginning could be so much different as far as reference and context towards the end. That's what's critical. Now, my stupid ass thought that the 18th was tomorrow. Today, but it's tomorrow. So, the rest of this episode, as well as the video, will be up on YouTube, our YouTube channel, Facebook, everywhere, on that 1 year mark. I haven't spoke with Leah least recently. I know there is a vigil. If she streams it live, it'll be definitely on the page, you know, because there's like 90,000 members. I'll even try to stream it from the YouTube channel everywhere, okay? I would also like to do a live with her. I know she's very busy. We will kind of just talk about the case. You know, that's not a definite. I would like to do that. We had planned on it, but we haven't really been able to speak lately. Hopefully I do get in touch with her tomorrow and we can discuss that. So, I apologize for the, you know, less than acceptable episode that I put out. It's not okay. And I hold myself to a higher standard than that. Thank you for listening. Thank you for following. Thank you. Please, if you could comment what you guys think, any input, it's much appreciated. If you don't mind, give us a follow, a like, a subscribe, a share. You know, we're just trying to raise awareness here for these cases. And we're really just trying to bring JVD home safe. Her daughter misses her. Her mother misses her. Albany misses her. So, until tomorrow, guys, I'm D, and I'm out.